Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln by Doris Kearns Goodwin, is a major work of presidential history and political biography. Published in 2005, it examines Abraham Lincoln through his relationships with the men who competed against him for the 1860 Republican presidential nomination and later served in his cabinet, especially William H. Seward, Salmon P. Chase, and Edward Bates. Rather than presenting Lincoln only as an isolated moral hero, Goodwin situates him within a network of ambitious, talented, and often difficult political figures. The book follows the rise of these men before the Civil War, then studies how Lincoln governed during secession, military crisis, emancipation, and national trauma. Its purpose is both historical and analytical to explain how Lincoln used empathy, patience, judgment, and political skill to manage conflict, preserve the Union, and move the nation toward the abolition of slavery. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Lincoln turned defeated rivals into instruments of national governance. The central idea of Team of Rivals is that Lincoln did not treat political opposition as a reason for exclusion. After winning the Republican nomination and the presidency, he appointed several former competitors to high office, including Seward as Secretary of State, Chase as Secretary of the Treasury, and Bates as Attorney General. This decision was risky because each man had his own ideological commitments, political following, and personal sense of superiority. Goodwin shows that Lincoln understood the practical value of placing exceptional ability inside the government rather than leaving it outside as a source of resentment or obstruction. The cabinet was not harmonious by design. It included conservatives, radicals, border state unionists, and men with presidential ambitions. Lincoln accepted friction because the crisis required competence, legitimacy, and broad Republican unity. His genius lay less in avoiding conflict than in controlling its consequences. He used rivalry as a resource, drawing on competing perspectives while retaining final authority. This makes the book distinct from simpler leadership portraits that emphasize charisma alone. Goodwin presents leadership as an institutional achievement built through selection, restraint, timing, and the capacity to make talented people serve a common public purpose. Secondly, empathy functioned as a political method rather than a private virtue. Goodwin repeatedly emphasizes Lincoln's ability to imagine the feelings, motives, fears, and ambitions of other people. In the book, empathy is not treated as mere personal kindness. It becomes a practical method for political management. Lincoln could absorb insults, delay retaliation, and interpret opposition without immediately personalizing it. This mattered because his cabinet included men who initially doubted his intellect, experience, and social standing. By understanding what each rival valued, Lincoln could assign responsibility, soothe wounded pride, and prevent disagreements from becoming permanent ruptures. His empathy also shaped public communication. He recognized the anxiety of border states, the impatience of anti-slavery radicals, the exhaustion of soldiers, and the grief of families. This awareness did not make him indecisive. Rather, it helped him judge when the public and political system could bear a new step, especially on slavery and war policy. Goodwin therefore presents empathy as a form of intelligence. It allowed Lincoln to gather information that pride or ideology might have blocked. The result is a portrait of political leadership in which emotional discipline and human understanding strengthen, rather than weaken, executive power. Thirdly, the cabinet became a test of authority amid ego, ideology, and crisis. Team of Rivals gives unusual attention to the mechanics of managing powerful subordinates. Seward, Chase, Bates, and other cabinet members were not passive advisors. They represented factions, regions, and policy preferences at a moment when the Union was collapsing and the Republican coalition was still new. Seward initially expected to guide the administration from a position of superior experience. Chase repeatedly cultivated support among radicals and remained interested in future presidential advancement. Bates brought a more conservative, border state perspective. Goodwin shows that Lincoln managed these tensions through a mixture of tolerance and firmness. He let cabinet members argue, compete, and even misjudge him, but he did not surrender presidential control. When necessary, he clarified that major decisions rested with him. This balance is important because the book does not portray inclusiveness as endless consensus. Lincoln listened broadly, but he also accepted responsibility for final decisions. The cabinet setting becomes a practical laboratory for executive leadership under stress. Goodwin reveals how authority can be strengthened by inviting disagreement, provided the leader has enough judgment, legitimacy, and self-command to prevent disagreement from becoming paralysis. Fourthly, Civil War decision-making required timing as much as moral conviction. The book situates Lincoln's moral development and anti-slavery commitments within the constraints of wartime politics. Goodwin does not reduce the Civil War presidency to a simple sequence of noble declarations. Lincoln faced secession, fragile border state loyalty, hostile Democrats. impatient abolitionists, uncertain military leadership, and a public that did not move uniformly toward emancipation. His decisions, especially around the Emancipation Proclamation, required attention to timing, military circumstances, constitutional justification, and coalition management. Goodwin shows that Lincoln understood slavery as central to the conflict, but he also understood that a policy announced too early or framed poorly could damage the Union cause. This makes his political genius inseparable from moral strategy. He moved in stages, using war powers and military necessity, while gradually reshaping the meaning of the conflict. The book, therefore, challenges readings of Lincoln that separate principle from practicality. In Goodwin's account, his achievement came from joining the two. He did not abandon moral purpose for expediency, but he also did not confuse moral clarity with immediate political possibility. That tension gives the narrative much of its analytical force. Lastly, Goodwin uses multiple biography to reinterpret Lincoln's greatness. One of the most distinctive features of Team of Rivals is its structure as a multiple biography. Goodwin spends substantial time on Seward, Chase, Bates, and other figures before Lincoln's presidency fully takes center stage. This can make the opening chapters demanding, but it serves a clear interpretive purpose. By reconstructing the careers, ambitions, families, and political networks of Lincoln's rivals, Goodwin makes Lincoln's achievement more visible. Seward had greater national stature, Chase had strong anti-slavery credentials, and Bates appealed to important conservative elements. Lincoln appeared less inevitable when measured against them before 1860. The comparison helps explain why his rise surprised contemporaries and why his later command of the cabinet was so consequential. The method also prevents the Civil War administration from appearing as a one-man drama. Goodwin shows how policy emerged from relationships, pressures, resentments, alliances, and personal transformations. Seward's gradual movement from rival to trusted ally is especially important to this design. The result is a richer kind of presidential biography, one that defines greatness relationally. Lincoln stands out not because others are diminished, but because their abilities and ambitions reveal the scale of what he had to govern. In conclusion, Team of Rivals is especially valuable for readers interested in American history, the Civil War, presidential leadership, political institutions, and the practical management of difficult people. It rewards readers who want more than a chronological life of Lincoln. Because its main contribution is interpretive, it explains leadership through relationships, rivalries, cabinet dynamics, and the pressures of wartime decision-making. Managers, public officials, educators, and students of leadership can draw practical lessons from Lincoln's willingness to recruit talent, listen to dissent, absorb personal criticism, and still make final decisions with authority. Historically minded readers benefit from Goodwin's detailed reconstruction of the Republican coalition and the political setting in which emancipation and Union victory became possible. Compared with many Lincoln biographies, the book stands out because it does not isolate Lincoln from the men around him or treat his greatness as self-evident. Its multiple biography structure shows why Seward, Chase, and Bates mattered, and why Lincoln's ability to direct them was extraordinary. The book is long and sometimes dense, especially in its early biographical sections, but that breadth is also its strength. It offers a persuasive account of political genius as a combination of empathy, ambition management, moral judgment, and institutional command. If you would like to support Doris Kearns Goodwin, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.